Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Katie Hannigan is from Indiana, and she's funny. Well, that's not fair. David Letterman is from Indiana. Anyway, Katie majored in theater at Butler University, and in 2008 made her way to the Big Apple, settling in Brooklyn, where she founded the Everywhere Theater Group. It focused on human relationships through technology, satirizing Facebook as well as social media apps and how we use them. A year later, Katie began doing stand-up in New York's alternative comedy scene. Her bent, the theatrical, tinged with wholesome Midwestern darkness. Katie's been featured on the Oxygen Network, Laughs on Fox, Good Day New York, and she's performed all over the country in places like Chicago, L.A., Atlanta, and Boston. She teamed up with Corinne Fisher, another member of the comedy community, suggesting they try collaborating on material that doesn't focus on sex and dating and relationships. That morphed into the Comedian Project. In their words, annoyed with comedian stereotypes of the single lady, the girlfriend, and the crazy girl, we refocus comedic perspective and present two new tongue-in-cheek, snarky, irreverent stand-up sets and redefine the comedian. The show was featured at the New York International Fringe Festival this year and has been picked up for a regular run at the Standing Room in Long Island City, Queens. Katie, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
So you majored in theater.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to be an actress? And where did the comedy come from and how did it fit in?
Well, I've always been a huge fan of comedy ever since my childhood. It was a big part of my family dynamic. And my dad was a big fan of Monty Python. And so I just kind of grew up surrounded by that. And I performed in community theater all throughout my childhood. My mom just kind of noticed that I was a ham bone constantly. And so she really encouraged me. When I was in high school, I kind of felt myself drawn towards comedy. And but, you know, I would try different things. And then when I was in college, my theater program was very eclectic, but it did not really address stand-up comedy as a performance option at all. So we did more, we did a lot of like David Mamet, a lot of...
That's not particularly funny.
Yeah, right, right. We did a lot of Sam Shepard stuff.
Oh, good Lord.
You know, a lot. So...
Were you feeling a little misplaced?
No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I did... they were really encouraging for people who wanted to explore different venues or different avenues of performance. So I did in college a lot of mime, actually, and a lot of kind of study of Charlie Chaplin's work. And it was really comedic. So that's kind of where I have the foundations mm-hmm. of my comedic work. But then I also did some more experimental installation work that was just kind of part of my own exploration as well.
Kind of funky stuff?
Very funky, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you think when you were in college, even though you might not be trained in the comedy strain, that you knew you were not going to, you know, be in A Streetcar Named Desire mm-hmm, when you mm-hmm. got out of school?
Well, yeah, when I was in high school, I did, I started doing improvisation. So, and I continued it when I was in college as well, not through my school, but I went to the summer program at the Second City in Chicago. And
you were accepted then, right? You had to apply, correct?
You do. You mm-hmm. do have to apply. Yeah. So I did a full summer there. And I knew from doing that, that it was definitely an option for me. And just kind of diving in, that really excited me. When I graduated, I had a couple friends from Butler who lived here in New York. So I moved to New York a week after graduation. And
really never having lived anywhere else,
never
right?
having lived anywhere
That's
else.
That's a big
yeah.
deal.
It was traumatic. It was very terrifying.
In a word, yeah.
Yeah. The whole first year I lived in New York was just full of surprises, you know, and I moved to a neighborhood that really wasn't the best. You know, of course, I had no idea. I was so naive. I just thought all New York is like this. Someone was shot on my block.
Where did you, was this when you moved to Brooklyn?
Yes, this was in Crown Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, oh, you know, because I saw the tape, I thought, is there another parade?
Oh, you mean you saw what was yeah. crime scene tape?
Yeah, crime uh-huh. scene tape, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. and, you know, so, but I had a couple friends who had lived in New York already. So I moved in with them, and then they were already doing work in the theater community. So I just kind of fit perfectly into their little group, and we started working together right away.
Well, what does that mean, that you started working together? Because then you hear about, and then and whether it's a cliche or not, didn't you have to waitress?
I did. I had a day job. I was so fortunate to work at a children's enrichment center. My old dance teacher from Indianapolis, from when I was in high school, she had moved to New York right after college as well. And she was about 7 or 8 years older than me. And she had started working at this company and gone on to become a manager and then I think a director of the company. And so I just gave her a phone call and she set it up perfectly. So I came, I had, you know, 1 week from graduation, I came, I had an apartment, I had my little friend group, I had a job, everything just worked out so nicely for me. And so then at nighttime, I had an internship at St. Mark's Church, Richard Foreman's Ontological Hysteric Theater. And so it was, you know, a lot of very experimental stuff going on. And I really liked a lot of it. And the small company that I was working with, Everywhere Theater Group at that time, we were kind of trying to make theater in a different way and use humor to kind of explore Facebook and explore, you know, a girl's slumber party and explore some like darker things that we had all been working through. And my roommate at the time, Leah Winkler, who is an amazing playwright, she was writing a lot for us and we were improvising, kind of coming up with stuff all together. And we would put stuff on through these kind of experimental theater or like fledgling programs like the Incubator, which was once part of the Ontological Hysteric Theater, through the Bushwick Star, through the Brick Theater. So things like that.
Yeah, but I'm confused because I said in the introduction that you founded the Everywhere Theater Group.
Mm-hmm.
How do you found a theater group?
Well, it was just Leah, uh-huh. Teddy, Chase, and I. Leah and Chase and I had worked together in college making little short films and things like that. And so we started just kind of submitting to different entry level, you know, like put together a short film and submit it and we'll show it and we'll pick the best three, you know. So we just kind of started doing stuff like that. And the more we would do it, we would all just work together. We said, okay, now we all work together. This is our theater group. And they actually took care of getting it 501c3 certified.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They took care of more of the, I guess, administrative aspects of it, which was great. And then I was also doing other auditions just for my own self at that time, you know, other.
So was the Everywhere Theater Group, for lack of a better word, successful?
It did go on to be pretty successful. I worked with them for about a year and a half until I started doing stand-up. All of our shows were actually pretty well received, but once I started doing stand-up, I said, I have to commit because I'm in love with it and there's just nothing else for me right now.
So how did that happen? How did you fall in love with stand-up and how did you make that transition?
Well, I was working at night at the box office at Richard Foreman's theater during his production of Astronome, which I loved. And that this was like maybe the fall of 2009, I think.
So you'd been here a year.
So I'd been here a year. I had been going on all these auditions. And when I tell you, Sandy, I mean, they were the worst, most, you know, all these young filmmakers, they're young men who are 19, they're 20, they have no grasp of, you know, feminism. So I'm going in on these auditions. And one of the ones I remember was a breaking point. I got in. I had already read the script. But they sat me down. They said, oh, there's been a slight change. No lines. So forget what we told you. We're just going to have the main character. He's going to pour olive oil on your bare ass. Can I say that on this program?
Of course you can.
Yeah, your bare ass. And then he's going to wipe it off with a piece of bread and eat it. And I just remember being like, oh, and, you know, so it was just time after time of going in for things like that. And I was really feeling disillusioned. And I felt like, you know, as you can see, like I'm a young, thin brunette girl. I look like everybody else, you know, and I'm from Indiana. And I just felt like I had no way in. So I ended up doing a student project and it was just poorly organized all the way through. But the other actor was a comedian. And I didn't know, but he had just been relentlessly mocking every step of the way. And he was cracking me up. I said, you're so funny. And he said, you know, you're really funny, too. I mean, we were just really having at it with these poor people behind their backs. And he said, you know, you're really funny, too. You should come to an open mic. And so I went, and I remember he was there. He went on stage. He bombed terribly. Uh-huh. I was mortified for him. You know, I mean, now I know that he probably was like, yeah, whatever, tried some new stuff, move on. But it was at that open mic. And I remember in college reading all these books about experimental theater and kind of like the avant-garde in the 70s, you know, when people will kind of like form a little collective and then become really successful. And when I was at that open mic, I remember seeing people who are now quite successful and just thinking, wow, these people really, this is exactly where like the hot spot of creative activity is going on. It's not where I was before. It's not at these crappy little student film auditions. It's right here. And pretty much from that day, I was like, this is what I want to do.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is comedian Katie Hannigan. But hold on a second, Katie. You go to open mic. What the hell did you talk about?
I remember exactly my first joke.
Were you funny?
I did okay. Yeah, usually people are okay their very first time doing comedy.
Because they don't know what the hell they're doing.
And I had done something that was similar to stand-up in college. You know, we would have little cabarets, mm-hmm. and I was always trying in college, always trying different styles of performance. So for me, it was kind of like, you know, something that you put together, you just go on stage and do it. And it was nerve-wracking. I remember, I think I said to somebody there, I said, I'm really nervous, you know, before I went in, and the guy said, I've been doing stand-up for 5 years. He said, just quit now. I was like, well, if this guy's here, I'm sure I'll be fine.
So you told a joke?
I told a joke. My joke was something along the lines of an observation about men who are short and how they're always, they have like a chip on their shoulder, you know, and it was something like, you'll be like, a short guy will be like, yeah, I'm short, so what? And you're like, sir, please, I just said hi, you know, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So I think I had a kind of intuitive grasp of misdirection and setup and punch.
Mm-hmm.
So, but which I did not become aware of until years later when I really was studying writing. But yeah, I did okay, and I felt great. And then, you know, it was just probably about a year of really kind of like trying to focus, prepare something that I thought wouldn't bomb, getting up myself to go.
Did
on
you need
stage.
An agent?
No. It's all completely self-discipline. You know?
So that was the way that you were honing your craft, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So you do stand up and then you get better?
Yep, I got better. I spent a summer in Los Angeles with my aunt who was living out there going to CalArts, and I went out with her and I didn't work for the whole summer. I took all these comedy books. I read the comedy books. I read the comedy Bible, and I just watched so many Comedy Central Presents, you know, and just kind of really learned how to write and then was performing more and more after that.
So self-taught.
Yeah.
I mean, not that you took classes necessarily.
No, I never did. Yeah.
So take us on this journey. When did you become successful?
I came back to New York, and then I was still, for years, just going to, I would go to maybe, you know, these open mics. Some are 2 minutes, some are 5 minutes. You don't usually get longer than five. Usually the ones that are 5 minutes, you have to pay to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would go to, I kind of calculated it out where I would go to a few open mics that I would pay for, and I would go to a few that were free. But I would go to about 15 a week, which is incredibly time consuming.
You're still working at
while
a job.
While I was working, mm-hmm. Yep, while I was working. And then in between, I was producing a small stand-up show at the now-defunct Happy Ending Lounge on the Lower East Side. I was producing that, still kind of going on auditions. And then after doing that for about another year, I started acting in some college humor sketches, which was really nice. I think I got that from doing – I was taking improv classes at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. Started doing the small sketches at College Humor and still doing stand-up. And then at one point I booked something really nice for MTV, which was great, which was like a nice credit. And once I had that
under your
credit,
belt.
Then it was really nice. I started to be able to get on bigger bills and things like that.
So what was your bent? What did you focus on? in your stand-up?
Well, I've always really tried to focus on my kind of perception of the world, which I think, I mean, for me, I've always been, since I've lived in New York, I've been a total fish out of water. I try to have an experience that I think is maybe, you know, if I notice something that's strange, something happens that kind of like rubs me the wrong way, I talk about it, my reaction to it, and then I try to find like the relatability in it. So it's all kind of like emotional observation, I would say. You know, like for example, I know you saw this kind of chunk that I'm doing at the show, people who are...
Yes, I went to the Fringe Festival and I saw the Comedian Project, yes.
Yes. I'm doing some work on kind of bourgeois Midwestern transplants living in Brooklyn, and which is 100% what I am doing. You know, so I'm kind of making fun of what I am, you know, and I have a self-awareness, you know, that I am that way, but I'm still kind of making fun of other people. And, you know, so that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
So how did it come to pass that you got involved in this Comedian Project and that you moved from focusing on you to focusing on other issues that pertain to women, or that you, how you were feeling, I'm sick and tired of how women are being portrayed in comedy?
Well, you know, I approached Corinne about the Fringe Festival just as an idea. Because
there may be people who don't know what the Fringe Festival is, so why don't you describe what it is?
The Fringe Festival is, this was its 19th year. It's a festival of new dramatic and comedic theater plays. And I think it runs the gamut of all different styles. There were some other stand-up shows, storytelling. There was some improvisational sketch comedy. There was some very dramatic work, kind of biographical, straight theater musicals. And there were 200 works all in the festival during a two-week period, and it happens annually. And then this is the one here in New York. Of course, they happen all over the world.
And this is the first time that you applied for and were accepted into the Fringe Festival.
Right. Well, it was actually Corinne's idea because she has...
How'd you meet?
We tried to actually say, when did we meet? When we can't remember. But, you know, it's the comedy community is really kind of wonderful in that way, you know, where there are only about, I'd say maybe 1,000 to 1,500 people who are really kind of dedicated stand-up comedians who are producing their own work. You know, people kind of come and go, you know. It is kind of a really wonderful close-knit community in that way, you know, where you have this kind of like, you know, it's like being in high school for, you know, now going on 6 years. And you have people where you say, oh, you remember that crazy gig we did and, you know, the Jersey Shore, what a nightmare, you know.
Sure.
And so, yeah, Corinne and I actually have no recollection of actually meeting. But we have been friends for years, and I was thinking about applying and collaborating with someone to the Fringe Festival, and I just thought, why not Corinne? Because we've always had a good time working together. She's funny, she's very straightforward, and she has a dry humor that I just love.
You're different.
And we are different. We're different, and we complement each other.
Exactly.
I'm very wacky and kind of like whimsical, you know, and a little, and Corinne is, like
edgier.
I said, yeah, she is edgy. She's edgy and dry. And, you know, we're different people too in that, you know, Corinne is very kind of like even keel. I am so high strung. I mean, I'm down and up all the time. But yeah, I approached her. I said, let's think of something. You know, at that time I was considering writing a complete half hour on, which I am still kind of working on, like a one-woman show about my time as a preschool teacher. And I have a lot of material related to it. And so I said, maybe, you know, maybe I'll do this, I'll do this. And Corinne said, well, she wanted to do something because she has the well-known Guys We've podcast, and she only talks about sex. And she's booked a lot of work from that, where people are now kind of seeing her as the girl from this anti-slut shaming podcast. And she, you know, obviously doesn't want to be pigeonholed as just that. And so I said, okay, let's maybe think about both of us doing that.
So you really both are extremes in a sense. You're not the same.
No, no, no.
She may be a lot ballsier than you are?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's that my humor is more subtle. You know, like I will definitely joke about the same subject matter that Corinne will, but Corinne will kind of just come out and say it, where I will say it in like more of a kind of understated, sarcastic tone and kind of like let the audience meet me in a way. Mm-hmm. Corinne's from New Jersey and I'm from Indiana.
End of story.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Do either one of you use yourselves as the brunt of your comedy?
Yeah, from time to time. I do it less now. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to be self-deprecating.
Self-deprecating. Couldn't think of the term.
Yeah. It's easy. It's easy to be self-deprecating, and I am at times, but it's just kind of, it's so one note, you know? I'll maybe do it once or twice in a set, but, like, I'm also not really depressed or, you know, I like myself. So...
If you're just joining us, my guest today is comedian Katie Hannigan. I said that you were both annoyed with the comedian stereotypes of the single lady and the girlfriend and the crazy girl. So how did you turn that around? I basically didn't give you a chance to explain it. You two come together. You say, why don't we collaborate? And what is it that you actually came up with? Describe it.
Well, one of the problems that we feel that women comedian face especially in a comedy club scenario, is having to meet the audience where they are. A lot of people who come to comedy clubs in Midtown Manhattan are tourists and they want to come to comedy or, you know, downtown. A lot of people are having their first experience with comedy. And so you have to, so you can't really go out and tell a joke about science fiction or an article you read about robots, you know, because people just, they don't have the, like, interest, you know. So a lot of comedy clubs, you have to talk about sex, especially like a late night show. That's what people want. That's what people expect. And so I felt myself falling into that trap as well after she kind of mentioned it too. And, you know, a lot of comedians have at least 10 minutes on sex, on dirty jokes. So we said, why don't we do a challenge? We'll write all new material. We'll see if we can do two brand new 20-minute sets on anything except for sex, you know, relationships or being the crazy girl. Because, you know, you see, like, women comedian come out, you know, and I have been that person 1,000 times, too, who, you know, where are the single ladies at? Oh, okay, you know, my boyfriend. And we just wanted to challenge ourselves to break out of that and say, what are my interests? What are my personal interests? And can I make some jokes about that and carry a show rather than, you know, maybe kind of trying like a new joke and maybe it doesn't do well. So you say, oh, well, I got a dick joke in my back pocket. I know that always works.
Yeah, I can always fall back on that.
Yeah. And so
no
just kind of
intended.
Exactly. And so just kind of saying, can we do that? And so what we did was we did work for about 6 months writing all new material.
And this is before you were accepted to the Fringe Festival?
This is after.
Said yes.
Mm-hmm. So they said yes.
Even though you didn't have an act.
We didn't have an act. I think we kind of just jotted down. You have to submit a script. And I don't really remember what we did. I think we jotted down something and we said, it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Maybe we, you know, I have a ton of material. So I think we just kind of jotted down some stuff and we said, this is the basic format. It's a challenge, you know, it is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. And they were totally receptive to that. But we started doing new material. And then we said, okay, how can we introduce people who aren't familiar with stand-up comedy at all or familiar with the stereotype of that we're kind of working against? How can we kind of introduce that? And that's why we had a three-part show where the first part was a satirical kind of ladies' night comedy where Corinne played a host, Mustafa Jones, who is this Arab-American comedian who is then hitting another parallel, which we sometimes see people playing on their own stereotypes. So, you know, Corinne as Mustafa made a lot of jokes about, oh, I'm an Arab-American, you know, kind of playing on those stereotypes, which, again, are very relatable. And it can be another trap that people fall into to reach, you know, to be relatable to people who just don't really have an experience with stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came out first as a girl who was focused on, you know, was talking about sex. Second was the feminist, kind of how hard it is to be a woman. And then third was a married woman who was just basically doing jokes about her husband. And
as in the same old, same old.
As in the same old, same old.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we tried to kind of hit each aspect, you know, because Corinne and I have definitely, there are shows in New York and in the tri-state area and all over the country that are like ladies' night comedy. And it's very cheesy and it's very 80s hack, you know, and they will, you know, nothing against the women that perform on the show, but it is encouraged to go on these shows. Like our show name for the Fringe Festival was Hooters and Hollers, you know, which is just kind of undervalues what women comedians bring to the table. We're already struggling against weird stereotypes anyway. I think comedy, for some reason, is one of the only art forms where we're still, as women, having to say that, no, I can be funny. You know, it's almost beyond the point where, you know, women have had to prove that we're funny for these past few years. And now we're saying, okay, we're funny, but we're just pushing ourselves as artists. Can we be funny with new and different subject matter that we're not
used
to?
Can you be?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have found that to work.
Yeah, I think it has worked for you.
Mm-hmm. Who do you admire comedically?
Sarah Silverman. I think her style is very, you know, tongue-in-cheek at times, and I really enjoy that. I love Maria Bamford is a wonderfully funny woman who doesn't really joke about sex and relationships at all. She does a lot of material about her family, about her own struggles with depression, about her dog. So I really look up to her. I love Chelsea Peretti. She's an incredible comedian. I love a lot of male comedians as well. You know, Steve Martin, Robin Williams, I've always loved them. Pee-wee Herman.
There's a name from the past,
yeah,
too. Where do you think you're going?
Well, I mean, the sky's the limit for me. I go on auditions, you know, which I'm not really, I don't think I can say. And also, I don't want to jinx anything,
sure,
you know. So
mm-hmm.
I do have some auditions that I'm working on preparing right now. I am a feature act, but, you know, I will be a headliner. I will definitely be touring.
Would you like it if I hired you to be in a sitcom?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So would you call yourself a comedic actress?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of hard because, you know, I don't like to split my focus, but I'd say I'm a stand-up comic, I'm a comedic actress. Yes, I'd love to have my own sitcom that I write and then I'm in, you know, kind of Roseanne. You know, where I have like that creative control, because that is what is important to me as a comic, is being the writer. And being...
And having the control.
Having, yeah, and it's not really about the control, I guess. It's just more my own perspective and my style of writing that's important for me.
Do you think that people are surprised that you're funny based on what you look like?
Yes.
You know, you're very angelic looking. You're very sweet looking. And I don't mean that pejoratively.
You
know,
thank
you have
you,
long hair. I mean, you're very attractive, but you don't look edgy or out there or outrageous. Does that work for or against
it's
you?
It's so interesting. It's actually both, you know, because I often have to tell people when I go on stage, you know, I say, listen, I get it. You know I look like somebody let the babysitter on stage,
yeah,
you know.
Right. And I didn't star in The Sound of Music.
Right, right. And I think once people realize that I have an awareness of how I look, you know, because that is a stereotype of a pretty girl getting on stage, doing stand-up and not really doing very well. And I think, you know, it is sometimes a lot easier for a pretty woman to get in a door than it is for, you know, somebody else. And I think so I have kind of have felt some resistance from people in the industry, you know, like, oh, well, how would you get this or that? But once I kind of show that I have that awareness and I can be very kind of mean and roast people. And, you know, I'm definitely able to hang with a group of comedians and have a good time and keep, you know, hold my own. And then I think it really does work in my favor when people see like, oh, you know, I'm really not what I seem.
Do you focus on the fact that you're from Indiana?
I do talk about it a lot. I mean, it is a big part of who I am. And it's also, I think, relatable to, there are a lot of transplants here. You know, I think that fish out of water in New York is very
universal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you feel really good about where you are and where you're going?
I do. Yeah, yeah. I try to be positive about everything.
Well, that's a problem, you know? With people from the middle of the country. They're like that. They don't complain. They're not, you know, that's a shortcoming,
yeah.
You know, Katie. But you feel that you're Katie Hannigan.
Yeah.
Is in a good place.
Yeah.
And we'll be hearing from you.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot,
yeah.
Katie. I really enjoyed meeting you
and having
a conversation.
Yes.
So lots of luck.
Thank you.
Lots of laughs.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.